Hey guys, welcome back to the Motherload Show. I am Jackson Dunn here with you in the WVCR studios. Now, I'm also on your podcast app, wherever you're listening in from. Thank you very much for listening in. I'm going to be talking a little bit today about toxic waste. Now, I am a scientist in my day job, and no, I'm not talking about toxic waste in terms of an environmental toxin, but rather how the economic system follows scientific principles and why waste within an economic system is a factor that a lot of people don't think about and should inform our economic policy. It's all coming up right here on the Motherload Show. Back when I went to school, and that wasn't too many years ago, I remember a trip, a field trip that we went on in college. I was studying power systems. So I was studying the electric grid. Specifically, we were going to power plants and studying how they worked, and basically different ways in which they not only made sure that there was consistent coverage of electricity to everyone who might want to use it, but also how they took care of things like waste and how they took care of things like overheating. It was a very interesting topic and something I wanted to study. I actually started to get my master's degree in it before I left to work for an engineering firm. But one of the things that really was interesting to me was the amount of energy that we actually produce in the United States. And it's true all over the world because it's a universal physics principle that for every type of energy that you produce, there will be some of it produced as waste. Now, this waste can come in a lot of different forms. Some of it is going to be in waste fuel, which of course is smoke or ash, or some of it can be waste heat, which comes from when you're running a machine. Not all of that energy that you're putting into running a machine is going into making that engine turn, but some of it is coming out as heat and it overheats the engine. That's why we have cooling systems on our cars, and it's the same principle in general for a power plant. Now, this physics principle does not only apply to engineering and to power. This is a principle that applies to every single part of our lives. For every time that you make food, which supplies energy to your body, you're wasting some of your energy on unnecessary movements, and you're wasting some of that energy on heat. Indeed, our bodies produce an amazing amount of heat, possibly enough to heat up 1 million gallons of water 1 degree every day. Now, that's a ton of heat, and we use a lot of calories and a lot of energy to keep up our heat level and to keep up our energy level every day. This happens as well in the financial system. You see, every time that you're processing a transaction, the same thing happens. Some of that transaction goes to waste. Some of that goes to the person who's making the transaction as part of their payment for their work. It goes to different people and to different businesses who are taking little bits, little percentages of each transaction to fund the financial system, be that communication, be that adding different staffing needs, many, many different things. Okay, this is why if you go to some gas stations, you'll see a cash price and a credit price. The reason why the cash price will always be cheaper than the credit price is because a credit card company is taking a small percentage of every sale, and they're using it to fund their communication system so that they can communicate with the satellite, so that they can process transactions, so that they can take care of issues if you have an issue with your credit card or someone steals your identity. None of these issues are seen in cash, and for that reason, some businesses will give you a break because they're not being charged for the services of a credit card company. Now, what's funny is a lot of people don't look at economic policy this way. And actually, part of that is the reason why you'll often see in the news. It talked about that millennials are some of the poorest people in America historically. Now, it's not that we don't have more stuff. Like, most of us are driving cars, just like our parents were. A lot of us are able to buy good food, healthy food. Most of us are able to buy even luxury items. There's actually a study that was done at one point that said that a lot of the reason that millennials are poor is because they end up spending their money on premium products such as premium coffees at Starbucks, where you're paying $5 or $6 for a gourmet coffee instead of buying cheaper alternatives. They're getting the good life, and they're trading it for some sort of financial security. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but a lot of people don't think about the little percentages in their life that make a big, big difference in their financial security. This has also been a problem, I think, in the United States, and I'm going to explain a little bit about how the United States and many other countries as well, particularly developed countries that are trying to provide lots of services to their citizens, are actually not paying attention to the percentages that are being taken away in terms of interest rates on loans, in terms of adding money to the system, in terms of having many different forms of communication of money so that you have lots of percentages being taken as pass-through charges. And for this reason, we have a bit of a financial problem in the United States. Now, some people call it a financial crisis when they see that the United States has a massive amount of debt in the many, many trillions, $20-23 trillion range in debt. Now, this isn't necessarily a problem because it matters on, of course, how much money we're making, right? How much debt we can take on. But it is true that we have a lot of debt. And we oftentimes, when we look at policies, we don't think about why these debts are ballooning. And it doesn't come from what people normally think, that we're providing goods and services that are better or somehow of a better class than a developing country. But it's rather that we're not thinking about our money in a sensible way, the same way that we might think about our money if it was in our own account, if it was in our own bank, and if we had to look at that amount every day. Now, it's a bit of a misnomer to say that we have $22 trillion in debt in the United States, because, of course, part of that money is being borrowed from actually assets that the United States has in itself. And it's sort of a funny way in which the tax system has been set up, that there are a lot of trust funds, for instance, the Social Security Trust Fund, that have massive amounts of money within them. And that money is being borrowed by the federal government for other programs and services, and interest is being paid back into the system. Now, this, of course, isn't always a bad thing. For instance, in the case of Social Security, when you take that money out and you give it to the federal government as a loan and they're paying interest back into the Social Security system, what actually ends up happening is that the amount of money that the Social Security system has grows because they're also getting the interest. I was looking at a USA Today article and it said by, I think it was 2027, there should be around $804 billion extra just in terms of interest that goes into the Social Security system from the federal government as repayment, as interest for the loans which it's taking out from the Social Security Reserve Fund. Now, this is, of course, again, not always a bad thing, but there is a bit of a problem, and that's that you can shift your own money around and you can loan your own money, you can lend your own money to yourself. And what it ends up doing is putting more money into the economy. For instance, think of it this way. A bank is allowed to have around a 10% capital reserve when they make a loan. In other words, they have to hold at least 10% of the money that they lend out to other people. So if they are holding $10 in the bank, they can lend $100 to other people. And they have to have at least $10 as security so that they can continue to make payments while they're getting interest payments in. And the interest payments and the payments that they're making out end up equaling each other so that you never have to pay out your entire stock, your entire bank. That's what happened in the Great Depression. People started trying to withdraw their money from banks more than the reserve that the banks actually had, which caused the banks to close up. It, of course, artificially inflates the amount of money that is inside of an economy. Because you can lend out, let's say, $10 to this guy, and then you can, based on the money that he's paying back to you, you can lend out to a future amount, if you will, to the next guy. And you can continue to lend and basically create a chain which inflates the amount of money that's being lent and bought and borrowed and sent between each other, that isn't really based on assets alone. And this is in a lot of cases what's been happening within the United States. This is part of the reason that inflation is a big deal in economies. China, actually, the Bank of China, uses this idea of capital reserve to how much money you have to hold to make a loan as a way to control inflation within the Chinese economy. And what ends up happening is if you lower that amount of reserve that a bank has to have, they can actually lend more money to other people based on future amounts that they will get in the future from interest payments and whatnot. And so you can artificially inflate your economy past other economies around the world. The United States is really adept at this, and actually part of the reason that the United States economy is so massive is not only because we have a lot of product. There's a lot of gross domestic product that we're putting out, a lot of things that other people want. But a lot of it is because we control a lot of the financial system. Wall Street controls a lot of the financial system. American banks control a lot of the financial system. The oil transactions are generally processed in U.S. dollars, so that it's all being processed through the United States. And for this reason, a lot of what makes us a financial powerhouse is our ability to both lend and to borrow from other nations. When we're borrowing from ourselves, what that ends up doing, though, is because we're able to borrow more than we actually have in assets, it creates a gap between what our assets actually are and what they appear to be to other people. And as this ratio grows bigger, as we borrow more from ourselves with less and less reserves of true assets, of true dollars, of true gold, or whatever we're using as our asset, we end up having a worse credit rating, and we look more shaky to other countries because they see that the amount of money in our economy is not really based on any asset, but rather on a trick of the financial books. This isn't always good money policy. It can be okay if you're being smart about how you lend and how you borrow and making sure that you never borrow more than you will be able to make back in the future. This has not been the case in the United States, of course. Right now, I believe the budget deficit for this year alone is over $1 trillion. Now, it's only June. It's going to get bigger, okay? And the thing is that a lot of what we're earning, the idea always was, let's spend more, and that way it will boost the economy, we'll make more money, and we'll make all of our money back. But sooner or later, this stops working, because once you spend a certain amount, there's simply no asset that can be a reserve to draw on from in the future. Simply, the interest payments alone are going to be taking more than we can actually make. And this is very much a problem for us in the United States, but we're by far not the worst country for this. Japan actually has the highest amount of debt as compared to GDP ratio, with over 270% of their GDP. That means 2.7 times what they actually produce or make every year is being borrowed as something that the country has to pay back at some point. A lot of this came from the war. Of course, Japan has a lot to pay back because of that. There was a lot of reparations that had to be made to other countries, but it isn't only that. It is a trick of the financial book so that a country's economy can grow, but it has some barbs, it has some teeth to it, in that if you actually don't have the reserves at some point, when somebody wants to withdraw from the bank of your country, you're going to fold. Just like the Depression. So it's important to think about that. And a lot of times people talk about we need certain services within the United States. For instance, a lot of the things that have been talked about in recent elections and in recent years, things like healthcare and Social Security and Medicare and welfare checks, these things have been talked about. And they're touted by a lot of politicians as great ways in which to help people out of poverty, which in some ways they are. Because they allow people, of course, to have a certain amount of baseline money and to know that they're never going to be financially destitute. The problem that there is with this, and it goes back to what I was talking about before, how there's always a physics process of waste within a system. Whenever you have a large system specifically with a lot of moving parts, like the financial system and specifically like the governmental financial system, there is going to be waste. So when you're dealing with something like Social Security, or when you're dealing with something like a healthcare system, rather than individual healthcare providers and individual doctors, when you try to incorporate it into a system that is controlled and run by a government, you start having issues with waste. A place where this has been really seen in the United States is the Postal Service. As we well know, the Postal Service has been losing money for many years. And there was some talk at some point about them shutting down delivery on Saturdays for the reason that they simply didn't have enough money to continue to give the mail, to deliver the mail. There weren't enough packages, there weren't enough letters coming in to make up for the overhead of the system, of the communications and the transportation system that the Postal Service had created. Now, of course, there was a big public outcry against this, and sooner or later, the government found a way to fund the Postal Service, despite the fact that it's losing money, to fund it with money coming from taxes and other places within the economy. But what's funny is that the United States government is not particularly good at controlling waste, and that is a prime example of it. There are, of course, transportation companies that do a lot better job than the Postal Service at making revenue and doing the same job. For instance, FedEx is making money, and it's doing more or less the same job as the Postal Service. Same with UPS. These are businesses, so their ability to transport, their ability to continue to grow, depends on their ability to make smart financial decisions. When you're a small part of specifically a large, large economy, such as the United States economy and the Postal Service, they're small enough that if there's some waste, if there's a little bit of waste more than a business that's trying to actually create a profit, nobody really cares. Because, hey, you know, so what? You pay 1% more for better service that goes to your house every single day, that the mail carrier can come every single day, that you know you're never going to miss a package. And so for that reason, we always feel like, hey, this is a service we want, this is a service we need, and we're willing to pay it for it, even if there is waste on top of it. Now, this, of course, has led to some real problems in that waste is not well controlled within a large government. When waste is on a small scale, when you're a business owner, for instance, let's say you own a pizza joint, you've got your regular expenses. You've got your expenses to keep the lights on and the power on within your business. You've got the expenses for materials to make your pizza. And you really can't afford to waste a whole lot of money. You've got to make sure that your prices are at a correct price point so that you can make a little bit of money, but not price yourself so high that people aren't going to come and buy your pizza. When you have a larger and larger company, you'll find more and more waste. You'll find this specifically in cases where a business is really large, that they end up having employees that are incompetent. There's always that one guy, right, who hangs out in the department of a big business and really does no work, but somehow knows how to skirt by on paperwork, or knows how to kind of play things to his advantage, or has some kind of friendly connection with a manager. And so he never gets fired, but you know he ought to, because he is not providing anything for the business, right? He's getting a salary that's much less than he is actually making for the business. And hey, that's not a large amount of waste. It may be only a tenth of a percent or 1% of a large business's revenue is actually being spent on the waste that's managerial waste. In other words, waste that's coming from poor staffing. It may be a very small amount, a very small percentage, but it may be actually a large amount of money. Let's say it's a $20 million business. You know, 1% of that. That's a lot of money. That's $200,000. For another type of business, that would be a windfall if they could somehow make $200,000. And this is, of course, why startups sometimes do very well, because they can figure out ways to take out the waste that other companies are okay with, that doesn't really hurt the bottom line of other companies. This is part of the reason that Amazon grew so quickly, is because they found a more efficient way to get products to people than stores did before. Stores before were spending a lot of money on overhead, were spending a lot of money on presentation to present products, to advertise products, to make them look good on a shelf. And what Amazon realized is, why don't we just open up a marketplace where you can directly sell your stuff without a middleman or a distributor? You don't have to keep on the lights for a brick and mortar business. You can sell it right here. Sure, there's a small percentage coming to us, Amazon, from each of your sales, but it's much less than you would be spending on the overhead and all the staffing of a large brick and mortar business. And Amazon skyrocketed because of it. They figured a way to cut waste. The government has no incentive to do this, though. Part of the reason is because the government's role has been redefined, and I would say poorly redefined, in the American mind. And that is, the government has been thought of, instead of as a way to provide a good or service, specifically the service of protecting our liberties and protecting our ability to create things in the country. That was how the government was originally made to be. But now it's become a way to get services and to get things for free. And we see this when they talk about the healthcare system. They talk about everything as a system or as an economic sector. The energy sector or the economic system, the reason why you talk about it in such big terms, and now there are some cases where that it is necessary to have a large system. For instance, the power grid is one of those cases where you have to have a large system because you interconnect from point to point. You have large power lines and you may only have one central power plant, right? That's supplying hundreds of miles of area. And to make sure that everybody has good service, they have to connect with other power plants from thousands of miles away in some cases with huge power lines, so that they make sure that everybody always has service, no matter if one power line is offline, one power line is online. Everyone has power and you kind of have to have it as a system. But the reason why the government now talks about things as systems is because systems are much easier to regulate. And systems are the way that the government is able to handle things much better, especially on such a large scale where they're dealing in billions and trillions of dollars instead of in the hundreds of thousands and millions that normal smaller businesses, private businesses, would deal with. Again, the problem is that the waste is incredible. There's always been that joke about the state worker. If you watch someone working on a roadside, the state worker who sits around and takes like 10 smoke breaks and takes an extra 15 minutes for lunch and never gets his job quite done, but still makes a bunch of money and gets full healthcare benefits. This, of course, isn't a huge part of the U.S. budget, right? Not a huge part of it is being spent on waste. But it's a windfall, a huge amount compared to the amount that a private business could spend on waste. If FedEx wasn't making sure it was competitive, if the prices weren't competitive, if it wasn't doing a good job on getting staff in and turning over staff that weren't doing a good job. And I worked at FedEx, so I have a little bit of an inside look at it. Their work environment is very tough. And part of that is because if the work environment isn't tough, if people don't contribute enough to the business, they're actually going to be losing money, and they're going to be losing out to somewhere like the USPS that doesn't really matter if they're making money or not. Because whether or not they're making money, they're going to get funded by a large government that it's maybe only 1% of their economy is actually spent on this type of transportation. But that would be more than the entire revenue of a small even a large company like FedEx, right? And it becomes a bigger and bigger problem as we see these things as systems, as we see these things as things that entitlements that we should be getting from the government. We fail to realize how much the government is actually spending on waste, and we're allowing things to be made into a system with a lot of moving parts, and each of those moving parts are generating waste. Every time you add a new staffer to the government, you're adding a certain amount of waste. Now, it's not always bad waste because it's going to someone's paycheck, but it is waste in terms of that money is no longer going to the service which you wanted. So if it's healthcare, if you then integrate it into a government system, you now have to employ regulators. You now have to employ you have to employ doctors on salaries. You've got to employ auditors to make sure that the government is running it correctly. You've got to employ people who are taking the taxes. You've got to employ legislators to make sure that things are going right. You've got to employ advisory panels to set standards on medical care. And all of these people that you're employing are taking money away from the thing which you actually want, which is healthcare. That's why the private system is a better system in general. It's not because of what a lot of people say, that it's because we need freedom. There may be an argument for that. And there may also be an argument that people should have affordable healthcare. There might be an argument for that. But the fact remains that for the government, it doesn't matter if there's waste in the system. It doesn't matter if the system is run poorly, because the system is only a small part of the American economy. And if there's waste in it, it doesn't really affect the body, right? It's like if you get a burn on your finger, it doesn't really hurt you, but it would hurt a fly, which is much smaller, to get the same amount of heat that you're getting into your finger and you're like, ouch, you know, you stick it in your mouth. For a fly, it would kill it. With the private sector, that's the case. They're much more sensitive to changes on the ground. They're much more sensitive to waste because they can't afford to lose. The government, because it has massive amounts of borrowing power from other countries and even from within itself, it has the ability to inflate its own economy to make up for the waste. Private businesses don't have that ability. Private businesses have to operate on the razor-thin edge of keeping prices affordable while making a small amount of profit, enough to keep their business alive and running. And they can't afford to waste that opportunity. So when we think about things that we want, when we think about things that we want from the economy, when we think about things that we think we deserve, for instance, free healthcare, we have to remember, of course, as everyone knows, sooner or later, there's no such thing as a free lunch. We're going to be paying for it in taxes. The more that the government borrows, the more money we're going to be spending as insurance payments on the borrowed money. The more money we're just going to be spending on paying it back anyway. And the fact is, the government doesn't care if there's waste, but private businesses do. So when you have the chance, take the private route. It isn't always a case, but if you have the ability, use things that are privately funded, because you'll find that there's a lot less waste. Also, the customer service in general for anything private is going to be better than for the government, for the reason that if a person doesn't do a good job on interacting with a customer, they're going to lose that customer, which is, again, a form of waste that a business cannot afford. It's important to remember that the toxic waste of governments, because they're too big to fail in many cases, allows for a lot of injustices that shouldn't be the case. Remember that you can make a change, though, with your dollars and with your actual votes, on making sure that you don't go for what sounds good, a free service from a government, but instead goes for what would actually be good for your pocket if it was you spending that money. Where would it be most efficiently spent, so that you could get the service you want and still keep the most amount of money in your pocket? This is the Motherlode Show. I am Jackson Dunn. I'll be with you next week as well, right here on the station that still plays anything. I'll be with you right here on WVCR and, of course, all the podcast apps. Download the podcast apps. Download also CastBox, if you have an Apple or Android phone. And I oftentimes go live. I do a comedy show there as well, so check that out. Thanks so much for listening. This is The Motherlode Show.